Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and parties! My name is Dan Morin, Prince of Parties, and I am joined by my fellow super cool dudes. John Maltz is here. Hi, John.
You get me first, so I get to do it. Brothers Rivers!
Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
I really bring the thunder, if you know what I mean.
We are here to discuss a couple superhero TV episodes that aired this week. We will start off with the latest episode of Stargirl, and then we'll talk about the latest episode of What If. And since Stargirl appears to be my bailiwick right now, we're going to do a recap of that. Season 2, Episode 7, Summer School, Chapter 7. Right, so we start off with Yolanda going to confessional. She's still getting brainwave flashbacks, but she's basically not willing to talk to her priest. It's July 3rd. Isaac has been listed as missing. Bad news, guys. The staff of the cosmic staff is recuperating, but slowly. In a board meeting for the America Dream, Barbara wants to help people, but there's another board member who doesn't. And then weird goop drops from the ceiling, which may be the Shade in some form. Yolanda's friend in the diner takes her section and the annoying coffee and the annoying customer, and then Eclipso makes her pour coffee on the cranky patron, which is creepy. And sure enough, the creepy kid, who I believe his name is Bruce, appears. Yolanda gives him a lollipop, and then he's mysteriously gone and across the street. Meanwhile, Courtney is asking Beth to track Eclipso, but they're being careful. She's surprised by Cameron, and they set up decorations while Mike is starting training, helping with lug nuts and adjusting the stripes hand into
so many lug nuts
metal horns, right? Yolanda is still hearing brainwave. She's going to text Court, but she sees him hanging decorations with Cameron, and so instead goes to the church and finds the priest with her mother, who is also cranky, and then she thinks she sees brainwave leaving the church. At the summer school, the principal is taken over from the our teacher that Eclipso possessed. Courtney's getting texts, and Yolanda's falling asleep. Then she thinks she sees a text from Henry and a picture, and then somebody who looks like him outside. Nobody notices her leave, though, as she follows a trail of blood through the hallways. She finds Henry with his throat cut, and he tells her he's in hell because she hasn't forgiven him. Then Brainwave shows up and says he's with her forever, but then she wakes up in class. Yolanda confesses to Court and says that this has been going on since before Eclipso showed up on the scene, and she and Court convinces Yolanda to tell Rick and Beth. Mike is putting together Stripe, and Pat gives him a pep talk. When Pat leaves, Mike sees a glint in the cloth, the pieces of the black diamond, which are attracted to each other, which when he picks one up, it turns into a leech, and then he's covered in leeches, which is also creepy. Pat is keeping the pieces because he hopes that the diamond is somehow still Eclipso's weakness. The team meets, and Yolanda confesses to the Rick and Beth that she killed Brainwave, and there's a bit of a set to as Yolanda sort of puts Rick on the spot as to why he didn't kill Grundy, and she knows she's going to have to be one to kill Eclipso, and she doesn't really want any of them to have to do it, but she doesn't really want to do it either. In the church, she confesses to the priest, but he doesn't respond because he's Brainwave. They get into a bit of a fight. He claims he sent his mind into her when he was dying. Court shows up and Brainwave incapacitates her. Yolanda kills him again, but then he turns into Henry and burns up. The real Courtney is there and has Yolanda touch the staff, which sort of dispels it for the moment. And Yolanda, fed up with all of this, says she quits. Later, she's not answering Courtney's calls. And then her mother picks up and says that Courtney has been a bad influence on her. And she's also quit her job at the diner. Court brings the family up to speed, and Mike confesses, as I think he did earlier this season, they didn't really mean to kill Icicle. While outside Beth's house, Bruce is eating a lollipop creepily. Heavy, creepy episode.
Does it take to get to the center?
Yeah.
Of Eclipso.
Of Eclipso, yeah. Yeah. Creepy week.
In a series of creepy weeks.
That's true. I read some stuff before the season, and they were talking about leaning into sort of the horror stuff, and they've definitely done that. It's definitely creepy.
I like the for the most part, I like the creepy parts. I love the kid. Really,
the kid's good. He's super creepy.
He's awful and good.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah, they're really using the visual language of horror movies quite well. It's a little unfortunate that it's summer school, because it does have like a little bit of that Amityville, like Stephen King Northeast sort of like vibe to it.
I sent you guys an image, and it got worse after that. Like the, you know, because it pans around the clock tower. And first of all, it passes the Dallas police station, which Dallas, Georgia is where the episodes are filmed sometimes. That's where that clock tower is. And they didn't correct that part. And then it's just like it's a row of leafless trees and it says July 3rd.
Like, they do hang a lantern on it in this episode.
I know they talk about it. They say it's the weather. It doesn't. I mean,
what are you gonna do?
I said this last week. It's not ruining the show for me or anything like that. I'm willing to take the fact that they can't fix everything. I just find it funny.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the right answer would have been for some of it to like film your like exterior shots in the summer.
Yeah, and they did. I mean, they have. They're reusing some, or however they're doing it. They are doing it with some of them. But you can't get them all, I guess.
It's okay. It's not. It doesn't take away.
But it would be expensive.
Yeah. The funny thing is like the trees having no leaves, like the grim sky, all works for like a Stephen King-esque horror movie. Like it works for the tenseness of it. It just does not contrast with like the dates and like the fact that it's supposed to be summer school. And where are they supposed to be? Kansas? They're in the Midwest, right?
Nebraska,
which I don't know. You know what, though? Over the recent years, as more and more stuff has been filmed in Georgia, I have a much greater appreciation for the multiple environments that are in that state. Mm-hmm. I always just figured it was like Louisiana, like not swampy, but like, you know, moss on the trees. I'm blanking on the name of it. You know, like
a bayou,
like a more lush
thing,
sort of bayou, like a bayou type environment with, or like even, you know, southern stuff, like a, I don't want to say plantation, but you know what I mean? Like that, like the rolling.
Yeah.
Please don't say plantation. Hills kind of. That's
that ship is sailed.
Unfortunately, in popular media, that's been my view of the South in terms of the environment, which is not a good look, guys. But between this and WandaVision and, you know, some other stuff, they could make Georgia look like a lot of places, which is great for the film industry down there. So that's cool.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's also, they also seem to make heavy usage. I noticed this week of like filters to make stuff look much grayer and dingier than it has in like, especially last season, I think, where there were a few more like bright colors that popped. Whereas again, it contributes a little bit to the sort of miasma overhanging this whole season of like, it's kind of desaturated and creepy. Anybody got any theories about whether or not this is at like, did Brainwave actually do something to her, or is this like an overdeveloped sense of guilt, or what
do you think? It's like Spock's Catra
than guilt. But
what'd you say, guy?
Sorry, I'm on my AirPods. I said I would explain it on the show. That my audio quality is extra bad this week because I'm at my girlfriend's place and I'm having dongle trouble. I can't connect my mic to my Mac. And
I'm gonna need a minute.
Yeah.
I didn't expect this kind of confession.
It is. I am. I have seen it for a year and a half.
Guy, could you save it for the Biff? Save it for the Biff letters page. Could you save it for the Biff letters page? Dear Biff letters. I never thought this would happen to me.
Yeah, it's like it's the antithesis of penthouse letters. It's just like
I can't put my mic into my computer. Yeah.
Yeah. So long story short, I have a good mic here. I've got it on my computer, but I can't plug my mic into my computer, so I'm stuck with my AirPods. It'll be fixed by next week. I'm sure there's something around here, but we just didn't have time to find it. Anyway, that's why it sounds bad. I forgot my point now. Now that I've confessed my inadequacies.
About Brainwave and what's happening to you.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, my quip was like, do you think it's like Spock's Catra kind of thing? Like, did Brainwave put himself into her head, you know? Like, is he living on
bad
somehow
Catra
through her? Bad Catra, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's plausible. Yeah, I
mean,
it seems.
I guess you're not. We don't know for sure, but that seems perfectly plausible, right?
Sure.
Within the world of comic books.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And he talks about, like, essentially he's going to drive her out and possess her, basically.
Right.
Which, it does seem, I mean, given the intensity of those visions that she is having, it seems likely, I agree, John, that there's something more going on. And it does, I remember they did talk about, this did show up in the first episode before Eclipso even came on the scene. So it does seem likely that there is something else, the pre-Eclipso, that was causing this. And that seems like a logical eventuality.
Right. And the visions seem to have a consistency to them too, or at least right. an internal logic, rather than just being super dreamlike and wacky.
Yeah. If it's brainwave, I mean, screw that guy and screw the kid for saying, I mean, you know, the vision of the kid for saying, like, I'm in hell because you wouldn't forgive me.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's just, you're in hell because you sent those pictures around.
Right.
That made me upset. I like the show less for having.
Oh, see,
me too.
I don't know. I mean, I guess I feel like that was brainwave manipulating her based on the thing that she's insecure about, but I don't know.
Right.
I mean, that's true, but it's still the writer's putting
that on the page and I don't know. Maybe I'm being too precious about the
fact that she takes that criticism, I think, is the problem. You know, like she seems to be bothered by that. Like she should have forgiven him, but I mean, she shouldn't have to forgive him.
No, right. I'm now
second guessing myself. I'm starting to think that maybe I'm getting to the age where I'm worrying about impressionable young people more than I should, because maybe they're smart enough to know what's up. But I don't like that. There's a cruelty to it, and a real world cruelty that is really difficult to sort of be okay with.
And again, I don't know. I mean, like, it's about drawing the line between the characters versus what the show is saying, right? Like, and I think I thought there was a great point where the scene where the mother is with the priest, and the priest sort of talks the mother down, being like, "Look, she's gotten enough judgment this year, right?"
Like, which says to me that
the show is not trying to condone that. And I wonder if part of this year is about her, you know, getting to a point of grappling with, like, you know what, I don't need to feel bad about that, or, you know, I don't need to worry about what somebody thinks. So I don't know.
Yeah. I also some of this was a little tiresome to me, because I also don't think she should feel bad. I mean, I can understand why you would feel bad about killing somebody, obviously. I don't think she needs to feel this bad about killing some guy who is, I mean, this guy in particular. I mean, this person is incredibly dangerous, and, like, you have a split second there where you might be able to stop this guy. You might have to do that.
Yeah.
So I'm this plot line isn't really working that well for me, I guess.
I get it, but at the same time, I feel like it's interesting. I thought the scene where she has it out with the rest of the team was good, and I liked her sort of getting to the point of feeling like, I'm the JSA member who kills people. And I was like, man, that's kind of a dark take on it, but, like, it is something that all superhero, it is a superhero trope, right? Of grappling do you kill?
Right. It reminds me a lot of Arrow.
Yes,
And I don't think in a good way, particularly for me anyway.
That was the thing that Arrow never did.
You know, they compared it to Solomon Grundy. I mean, the reason why he didn't kill Solomon Grundy is because he felt Solomon Grundy was being used by the ISA.
Yeah. Which is true, 100% true. Yeah. Like, Solomon is kind of a big dummy.
He's not killing him because he's a pawn. I mean, and this other guy is, like, one of the masterminds.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, anyway. I mean, I don't think they're comparable, and I wish that somebody had said, you know, pointed that out in that discussion, because...
It's like, Solomon Grundy, as strong and powerful as he is, could be kind of contained, right? This mental guy, what do you do with that? Not to say that excuses anything.
If Charles Xavier was bad, we'd all be dead.
I mean,
what if, John?
Yeah, it's what if? Yeah.
I think this is just the show trying to grapple with that eventuality, and I think it is also a little more interesting and nuanced just because you're dealing with kids too, right? Like, it adds a layer to it of, like, wait, we're like kids with superpowers. Are we allowed to go around and murder people? Like, even if they're super bad people, is, like, that a thing we should be doing?
Yeah. Right.
So I don't know. I think that's, I suspect you're right about the sort of the distinction between those two things, and I agree with it. And it makes me wonder if that's where they'll get to in the end. But yes, we do still have to go through the motions.
I don't like the motions.
I know. You're a very stationary sort of guy.
Well, that's certainly true. Ask anybody.
I thought that the use of Eclipso this week, we talked about the kid, but also the diner scene, I thought was effective in its creepiness.
Yeah.
I like that they, having seen him like pop up for real last week, they sort of move him a little bit more to the background where he's just sort of like feeling out like, what kind of evil can I do?
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a little bit of a break from that plot line and lets you do like focus on some other thing. I suspect next week's episode will probably focus on Beth, it seems like.
Oh yeah.
We're a little behind on that whole Midnighter thing.
Yeah. Yep, we got that floating around. We've got Joel McHale floating around. We've got Green Lantern's daughter floating around. There's a lot of floating around.
Yeah.
So
that'll be interesting. So is it my understanding that this summer school theme will go through like half the season and then they're going to do something else?
Or it seems unclear to me at this point because I thought it was really going to be like the first handful and we're now...
Yeah.
According kind of to, right. If you want to believe Wikipedia, it's the season. It's the whole season. It's just summer school.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought two episodes. I was like, okay, I guess that's wrapped up. But and I forget what happened. There was some incident that made it feel like we'd kind of completed a little part. Of, like she hadn't graduated summer school, but I thought we'd wrapped up. I forget some villain went away. Oh, it was the big fight with what's his face? Shade.
Mm, mm-hmm.
I don't know, whatever. At some point I thought it had gone away. It clearly hasn't. And I don't know. Like they're running out of episodes to do another arc after. So it seems like this is what we got.
Right.
I think the idea probably being like the first season was whatever was she a sophomore, junior? And then you get summer school, and then the next season will probably be the next whatever her next school year is.
Like Buffy style, which is, you know, makes sense. It worked for that show. Wait, did Buffy do that? It did do that, right? Every year. Yeah. Every season was
another.
She went to college.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let's hope it doesn't go
so
that way.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else to add, or should we just do a rating?
I'm ready to rate.
Ready to rate. Bald guy, rate it right away.
But honestly, the other thing is the mother. Oh. Her mother is comically bad.
Oh, Yolanda's.
Yolanda's. Yeah.
Yes. Just I think that's been clear. That's been clear the whole time through.
And yeah. Anyway, so it continues my complaint about parents in this.
Yeah.
I mean, I think in some ways that's intentional because given the perspective of the kids, it's again it has that 1980s kid ET sort of feel to it where it's like the parents. But like I think Beth's parents are hilariously over the top bad as well, right? They're always busy, even though they claim like, no, there's nothing more important than family. We work 120 hours a week. Like that does not seem right.
Yeah.
All right, guy.
I think she could be a little more nuanced.
Damn right. No, but I don't. But, I don't think the show's interested in her.
I guess not.
Right. Yeah, but that's the thing, right? If the show is not interested in her, why should we?
Like a foil of a plot. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Week Biff, there's parts I like. I like the language of horror film. I like that. I thought that was effective. There's some genuinely spooky stuff. I thought, pretty well written for this show. I thought it was pretty good. I feel like we've underscored a lot of sort of negative points here, like the, I know, Dan, you feel less about this, but like I have concerns about that whole plot line with Yolanda and the parents being sort of just oppressive in their own weird ways, or like at least not helpful, with the exception of Pat, who also kind of screws up a fair amount. I like the show. I'm not sure. I think the show is well made. I'm just not entirely sure that I like what they're making all the time. Although some of it's got real highlights. I suspect next week if Sportsmaster comes back, I'm going to be like, this show's the best show ever.
Yeah. Watch what you say. And I like, because Sportsmaster could come back any week.
Yeah, it could. And that'd be great. And like this episode was, at least to my sensibilities, much, much better than the Gaffigan Genie episode. But that's, I think it's interesting that they're trying to play with both of them. So it's like it's a week Biff. It's good job. Fine. I will watch again next week. I just not particularly super excited for this one beyond sort of the, you know, the language of horror film.
Okay. Yeah. John?
I'm giving it a strong John Jr.
Ooh, interesting.
Okay. Wow.
That's a strong baby.
Super baby. Yeah. Super
yeah. There's just, baby. I was just sort of bored watching parts of it. Because I just sort of found the angst overridden, I guess. I don't know. And I did enjoy enough of it that it was good. I mean, I feel like maybe John Jr. should be a little bit better than what we're giving it credit for. I think we should use John Jr. a little bit more, maybe, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah. I don't, you know, like I still like the show. I still look forward to watching it. And like, you know, certainly like some of the characters very much. And mostly the characters that I don't like are kind of on the periphery, so it doesn't matter that much. But I think it's just for me, like, I think some of the high school aspect of it is, you know, the fact that it's, you know, kind of a show aimed at younger people isn't working particularly that well for me, which it's not really supposed to, I guess. So
We'll make them all, they'll make them all 40 years old next season. It'll jump forward.
That'd be great.
70s, they're in their 70s. All right, to counterpoint John, I'll give it a mild biff. How about that?
Okay, that's fine. It crosses, you give it what you want to, Dan.
Yeah, it crosses the line. I agree, it wasn't my favorite episode of the season even. There's some stuff I really like in here. The kid is super effective and creepy.
Yep.
I enjoy the scene with the diamond and Mike and Pat. I think that's good stuff. And I enjoy the family. I really actually really like the scene at the end where the family is sitting down to like have their little kitchen meeting. And I just enjoy that the entire family is part of it. That felt very nice to me and like refreshing rather than like feeling like people were all being like kept on the outs or whatever. It just solidified it a little more as like having that family angle to it. So I enjoyed that part of it. But I agree that, I don't know, the guilt plot is a little overplayed and a little like just, you know, I agree with your angsty than I need. So yeah, I would like to see a little bit less of that and a little bit more of, I don't know, just the team, the fun. I loved last week's episode. I thought that was fantastic, and this is going to fall a little short of that, no question. But
right,
so more to come.
Yep.
I think it just occurred to me while you were saying that. I think sort of why the guilt plot bugs me so much is, A, first of all, I've said this before, you should not feel guilty about that. That's him, and it's this weird, like, it's a puritanical thing, and it's bad. The other thing is, this is a sexless show. This is not a show that discusses that kind of thing, except this one context.
Yes.
And that contrasted it so much. Like if they were dating and there was other stuff going on and a little bit more, I don't know, not sex per se, but you know, teenage romance, that would not seem so disparate as it does to me. Maybe it would fit in a little bit better. I'm not entirely sure I haven't really formulated my thinking on that, but it seems apart. It seems aside from the gist of the rest of the show.
It's the only portrayal of it, yeah. I mean, I don't
think they're effectively slut-shaming her, and she's, like, the only person who's had any sort of sexuality at all, and, like, that's, it's getting to me.
I think that the show does not, let me put it this way, I don't think the show thinks Yolanda is at fault for that, or should feel guilty that, but
I don't think so.
But I think that just by virtue of the fact that, as you said, it's the only thing that gets highlighted in that sphere,
It
kind of casts a pall over it, but who knows?
Right,
maybe
we
have Courtney and Cameron embarking on something now. Maybe they'll decide to have some counterpoint to that. I don't know. That seems,
I don't know. Yeah.
There's a romance angle happening at least. So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. We're going to talk about the latest episode of What If, and John's going to do a recap.
All right. The premise this week is that Loki doesn't get adopted by Odin and Frigga. So Thor, for some reason, grows up to be the party prince. He then goes to Earth when he's supposed to be studying as Odin is sleeping. And he lands in Las Vegas and kind of scares people initially, but then starts partying with everyone. And a whole bunch of aliens show up to join the party, Jane and S.H.I.E.L.D. are worried because the last planet he partied on was destroyed. Jane and Darcy, though, join the party and end up having a pretty good time. Hill's still worried, so she calls Captain Marvel to send Thor packing. Fight, fight, fight. It's kind of a stalemate. Darcy gives Jane the idea to call Frigga, so she does. Maria Hill is about to drop a nuclear bomb on Thor and Carol when Frigga appears as a vision and scolds him. She scolds Thor. She says she's coming to Earth and Thor needs to clean up his act. And after some pleading, he managed to get all of his alien friends to help him. By the time Frigga arrives, he's teaching a class on Earth culture to the other Asgardians. And it's going great until Mio Mio comes flying in covered in glitter and stuff, and he's busted. He then later stops by Jane's trailer to ask her for a date, and as he's leaving, though, a portal opens and an army of Ultrons come out, and Vision Ultron apparently has all the Infinity Stones. So it ends on one of those cliffhanger notes that all of these pretty much seem to do, or most of them.
Yeah, I don't know where you're going, but you're going somewhere.
Yeah. My notes were pretty abbreviated this week because there's not a lot of twisted plot points here particularly. It's just a lot of pretty good jokes.
Yeah. After a few weeks of doing downer stuff, we had some, you know, more like last week's I think we all thought was underwhelming. This week is just like, it's pure comedy. It's pure comedy. And I think it's great that they decided to do that because it shows how much range this show has, mm-hmm. in that you can do drama or you can do comedy or you can do basically anything you want. Right. And this executes very well on the comedy. Lots of Easter eggs, lots of great Chris Hemsworth. Always great. So his comic timing is impeccable, even as voice
Hiddleston.
Tom Hiddleston, fantastic. And I would agree with an assessment I saw somewhere. I think this is Natalie Portman's best MCU work. And I am a big Natalie Portman fan and always have been.
Yeah, she's great.
She's really good here.
She's not given much to do in the other ones.
No, she's just always been above the material and she knows it. So she's like, okay, I guess I'll cash the paycheck.
But this time I feel like they actually let her stretch her legs a little bit and just sort of
good. I was sort of surprised that they got her to do it because
I agree.
I mean, I guess they've got her signed now, so maybe they
I don't understand the vagaries of the contracts for these things because they have her and then they don't have Brie Larson, who is doing another movie and is a major, you know, Captain Marvel is a major role in this episode.
Right.
So,
well, I mean, just depends on your agent, I guess, you know.
So, yeah, I guess.
Or whatever contract you choose to negotiate.
I didn't find that I missed Brie Larson in this particularly. I mean, I think the voice actor for Captain Marvel was fine. Doesn't like super sound like her to me or anything, but it didn't It didn't really detract from the episode for me at all.
Also,
I'm also kind of okay with the replacement voice actors not necessarily sounding like the originals. I'm okay with that.
I think if you try too hard, it's weird.
Right. Even if they look a little different, like if you recall Black Widow in the one where everybody's getting killed, she looks a lot more closer. She looks a lot closer to the comic book.
Much like himself in this one.
I thought he looked pretty good. He just doesn't have the beard or anything, which is the...
Well, yeah, maybe that...
I think that's what mainly threw me off. It's weird who looks like themselves and who doesn't. I don't think Jane looks particularly like Natalie Portman, nor do I think...
No.
Darcy looks particularly like
Kat Dennings.
But then you get people like Fury only shows up briefly in here, but there are other characters who are like spot on.
I think Loki looks, I mean, you know, even though he's different in this episode, he looks much like Hiddleston.
And who was it that I also I'm trying to remember now who was the other. There was another. Maria Hill, I think, looks kind of more like her comic book version than like Kobe Smulders.
Yeah.
But
I also
thought Kobe Smulders did an amazing job with her. And I love that. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy that character. And I wish they, got more use out of her.
Yeah,
I want a lot more of her. She's great.
Yeah,
I like how she's just like basic high level S.H.I.E.L.D. functionary, and she does a great job of it. Plus, she's funny. She's just a naturally funny person.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes. So, there was a whole subplot that they had done for Avengers. If you watch the outtakes, there's a subplot in there where she disagrees with Fury a lot. Like she's very combative with him instead of just being a faithful just lieutenant
being a good agent,
as it turned out in the movie. And then comes around in the end when she's being questioned by the Security Council. She, you know, after being combative with him the whole time, the Security Council's like, well, you know, I think Fury really screwed this up. And she's like, no, he didn't, shut up. But
that's good. Yeah. That's what you want in a top lieutenant, is to be like, check me on this, you know, like McCoy yelling at Kirk that he's doing something stupid all the time, you know, like that's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
She also, she appears in I forgot how much of it she does show up in, because she shows up in several of the movies. She shows up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., one of the few characters to make the jump between the two shows.
Yeah.
And,
Spider-Man.
Yeah. She's sort of in No Way Home. Yeah. Far from home. Yeah, anyways, yeah, it's a great supporting character, and I wish they should give her a bigger part in some of the other stuff.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's kind of hard because S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't exist anymore. But
we saw
she could have a big part in Secret Invasion. Yeah.
Although I shared around today a clip from Chloe Bennett basically saying in Instagram that she is not in Secret Invasion. Please stop bothering her in random stores.
Yeah, that's a really annoying part of like this kind of fandom.
Yeah.
Our readers excluded. Well, I don't know. Our readers seem awesome. So, and I'm not even trying to be nice. It's very rare that anybody's a weirdo to us or in our comments or anything. But yeah. She said she got asked about being in Secret Invasion as she was in the tampon aisle at like Target. And that sucks. Just let somebody be. Like, do you care? It doesn't matter. It's going to be on the screen. And if she's there, cool. And if she's not, don't. You don't need to fascinate
You don't need
this,
to bother people in real life.
No.
Yeah.
Or on the internet, like, frankly. But
right.
Right. And we're all Apple familiar, at least. Or like, you guys are in the Apple press, and like it's similar to like just rumors and leaks and all kinds of insanity that people get wrapped up in, and it's like there's nothing healthy there. Whatever you think you know, who cares? Until it exists, it's irrelevant. It does not matter to you, really. So anyway,
I was over
yeah,
I was thinking about some of the Easter eggs in this episode, and there are some pretty good ones. I mean, you know, we get a decent amount of Howard the Duck in there, and who marries Darcy in Vegas at one point. I believe in the scene where they're dancing on the bridge at one point, Peter Quill is in the background.
Yondu's there.
Drax is there.
There's a girl with her head half shaved who looked familiar, but I was kind of wondering if that was like someone from Star Wars, one of those two. It looked like that. I was wondering if that was supposed to be some sort of vague reference to Star Wars. But
I would definitely do that. Put in a couple of Twi'lek.
I think that would be funny.
Ladies or something. Yeah, it'd be hilarious. Right. Yeah.
There was a the Skrulls show up and Thor makes them all impersonate him. Very funny. There are a couple other really good just random bits in there as well.
Drax throws up
at one point. We talked about Loki. Oh, I blanked on what the other one was. There was another one that was Jeff Goldblum as the DJ at the party.
DJ, yes.
Yeah. Stops.
Yeah. That was awesome. Yeah. I love
There's also just like stuff that's not really Easter eggs per se, but it's just funny. I mean, like every time one of them gets punched and flies up into the air, they show the name of the country.
Yeah, right, the map
on the land where they're landing.
Yeah, the maps are pretty great. Yeah, that was excellent.
and then the thing at Stonehenge is I don't know what these are. No one does.
It was fun to see Captain Marvel come back too. I mean, like, because we don't really have a lot of time with her yet in the MCU. And so having her show up and you're like, and just getting, I mean, I know the trope of the superhero fighting the superhero is super overdone, but I thought it was pretty great here.
I thought it was too.
But that's fine. Like, it's a trope for a reason. It's funny. Like, you can play it for laughs just as easy. And of course, everybody wants to see superheroes bash each other. It's kids banging their toys together.
Yeah, they basically, neither of them hurts each other at all is the thing.
Right.
There was I really enjoyed they got Clancy Brown back to do Searcher and the Statue of Liberty just for like one gag, basically.
Right.
Clancy Brown's great. He's so funny.
Yeah, I really enjoy him.
And they had the woman who plays Topaz. I don't remember her name.
Yeah, Rachel House.
She delivers like one line.
Yeah.
She calls Thor a loser.
I did have a bunch of my wife, of course, often pauses it and makes me explain where characters from. So there's like one scene where he's with those, like, I can't remember what their names are, but like the gold aliens from Guardians 2 show up at one point. And it's like it's just all the aliens from in like all of the MCU, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Pretty great.
Yeah. Pretty good. Not a lot to talk about, though.
No, but, it's just a good episode.
Not really. I mean, there's some great touches. I mean, like when he's furiously scrubbing off Thor rules from some statue, and they keep cutting back and forth between him and Frigga, just like flying relentlessly towards Earth, like almost taking forever for some reason. Even though every time we've seen the Rainbow Bridge in news, it's practically instantaneous.
Yeah. I like that. I liked Jane getting Heimdall's attention in order to get beamed up, basically. There's just a lot of fun stuff in this episode. Like you said, there's not a lot to talk about. It's just, it's well executed. It's possibly one of my favorite. The premise is so paper thin it doesn't even really make any sense, though I love that he and Loki are still like super buds. And of course Loki is just like, when Loki, he asked Loki to stay and help him clean up, and Loki's like, she's not my mom.
Brothers from another mother.
All of that good, and just, I don't know, more comedy in the MCU. I've always enjoyed the more comedic offerings. I love the Ant-Man movies because of that. The Ragnarok, is a great movie. The stuff that leans into comedy, I think I generally enjoy even more.
Yeah.
Me too. And it's particularly for this show, I think it was a nice change of pace, considering several of the episodes were real kind of downers. And then last week was just sort of a disappointment. So
I'd be curious to know how if they rearrange stuff after. Like if they had an order in mind, and B, if once they saw the work, they're like, okay, let's put this week at one here. We're gonna have a fun one after. We're gonna have a couple of bombers, and then, you know, a middling one.
With the slow burn they've done on The Watcher, I think that they've probably had this order in mind.
That makes a lot of sense.
It seems to be escalating. You know, he's becoming more and more clear, more and more of a character. Doesn't do anything.
That is true. Okay, so there goes that theory.
I don't know. I mean, that's just...
Yeah, well, we still don't quite know what is this building towards, something? Or, I don't know. There's two left.
There's still, I mean, we've seen some previews with characters together. Yeah. I guess they could be, it could be different, but I think they'll probably end up someplace where it ties to...
It could be like... alternative Avengers versus alternative anti-Avengers, or whatever, Legion of Evil kind of.
Yeah.
Although,
or when you get Ultron together with it, that goes around and tries to clean up the bad stuff that's happened.
Oh, yeah, the TVA.
Yeah. Well, not the TVA, but
Kang, Mephisto.
Time variants.
Yeah, but how do you? I mean, Ultron with all of the Infinity Stones versus Thanos with all of them minus or alongside Thanos with all of them minus one and a zombie. Like, the bad guys are way super duper powerful. Like, it's ridiculous.
They're pretty overpowered.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's what you're supposed to, you know, your heroes are supposed to go up against a super overpowered villains. And
did not work for Doctor Strange. Sure, didn't work for Doctor Strange, though.
Except for Doctor Strange.
Right.
Because he was going up against himself. That was the problem.
Yeah.
That's toughy. What do you do going up against yourself?
That every week.
Yeah, I know. It's tough. I don't know. Do we just do a rating?
Sure. I mean, I don't think it's going to be a surprise, but...
Okay.
Yeah. Go for it, John.
Yeah, it's a biff. It was super fun. I mean, that's about, you know, like, all I can say. I laughed. I mean, I really laughed, you know. People say laugh out loud and don't really mean literally laughing out loud, but I literally laughed out loud at this episode. So I would like to, you know, they can't do them all like this. I would love to see some more, though.
Yeah. I agree with John. Sounds good. A lot of fun. Good stuff. A few more, like a little balance in this season would be appreciated. Because, you know, they've been pretty dark, and the premise of What If does sort of tempt you to do the darkest thing, because you can't possibly do the darkest thing in the real universe.
Sure. Sure.
But right. I guess except for Endgame, maybe.
Right.
But like, you know, the good guy's got to win. It's got, you know, there's a formula, but there's a set of expectations built up around superhero movies. And guess what? The heroes generally win in some fashion. But yeah, so it's nice to be able to just be like, you know what? We don't have to make everything garbage. We can actually have a really fun thing. Wouldn't that be great? And yeah, it turns out it was great. Yeah. I think that if I have one minor quibble, it's Jane Foster bangs Thor and then he leaves. And she seems upset about that. Like, not that she's upset about that, but it. She seems like she's like, oh, where did he go? Like, what's going on? And she seems more interested in him, in his affections, rather than just like, oh, I hooked up with a party god. And I didn't get the sense of that in her character from
the
movies.
Well, and they didn't connect the way they did in the movie, even. I mean, not that they had super, you know, not that
chemistry and nothing.
That relationship was laid out all that well in the Thor movie, but they did it at least, you know, they made an effort. And in this, it's just like, yeah, it's just a party. They just all they did
well,
was
so
pretty.
In the Thor movie, it felt like she was obviously hot for him, because guess what? He's Chris Hemsworth.
Well,
and that was one thing, but she didn't seem to have the character that would, if she had slept with him, be all wrapped up emotionally in him, if not for the subsequent elements of the story that we see. You know what I mean?
Like, although I will say, in counterpoint to that, like they do show that Thor is super like into her as well, right? And they have so like it's a little bit reciprocal.
That was later in this episode. Yes. It was just like one of the first things in the episode that I'm like, that's a little weird.
And
but the episode was fun.
The other thing is that they rely on the movies to fill in.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, well, we talked about this with the Doctor Strange episode where
you're given the movies as writ, and you're supposed to take some of that baggage into these show.
So. With that, it makes sense for sure. But like, it didn't make sense for like, I don't know, hooked up with a space god who's a party animal. Like, am I really going to be all broken up that he's not there in the morning? Like,
right.
I don't know. I would probably be relieved. I don't want to have breakfast with this weirdo. Yeah.
And like, he's not going through that process that he's going through in the movie at all. You know, he's just out there partying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, strong biff. Dan?
Yeah, no, I ran out the biffs. I enjoyed this quite a bit. It's one of the first episodes I'm like, you know, I'll probably want to rewatch this at some point, because it's not a total downer at the end.
Yeah.
Even if it has like a cliffhanger, it's not.
I watched it twice and almost watched it the third time.
Yeah, well, that's you, John.
That's me.
It's okay for Moltz. I liked it a lot. There's lots of great gags in here. It's a fun opportunity to just sort of cut loose and do something that you know, I feel like you can't really do. And again, leaning, the strongest parts of the Thor movies have always been comedy, by far.
Yeah,
by far. Probably. It is of all of them, you know, Ragnarok clearly the best. I think even the best parts of Thor 2 are comedy. Like the portal fight at the end.
He's riding the underground.
Oh yeah, that's fun.
Yeah. All of that is fun, and that is, you know, it's one of the things I think that makes the MCU overall work, is that it tends to be fairly liberally laced with comedy, right? Like, there's always something, even if it's just quippy humor or whatever. Most of the movies have something funny in them, and that is what keeps them from being, you know, dreary slogfests. So I think this leaning straight into comedy on this, great. I have no problems. There's basically very little plot, and what plot there is literally cartoonish. But I'm fine with it. I like having that aspect, and the whole point of this show is doing stuff that you don't do elsewhere, and to me this is a real success.
Agreed.
So there's two left. I have no idea. I'm not really sure what is even. I know we said there's some character shots that of people who haven't appeared yet, but I don't even really have a conception of what major characters are left to feature. So I'm looking forward to it.
I don't remember either, honestly. I'm not sure. Well, I'm not sure if it was so much characters that haven't shown up yet, or as it was just combinations of characters that haven't shown up yet.
I thought it was really interesting, because I noticed in the credits this time that Taika Waititi was credited, and Korg appears but has no lines.
Doesn't say anything.
Which I thought was interesting. It's like, why you gave him a credit, but he didn't really
Maybe they had stuff that they cut. Maybe
yeah,
they got
could,
him
I guess
to show
so.
Up and do voice some yeah. lines, and then they and
he,
didn't
he had some lines in the Star-Lord episode, I think, right? Doesn't he show up in the Star-Lord episode?
I think so.
I think he did, and I think he had, yeah. it yeah. wasn't a lot, maybe a line or two, right. but
yeah.
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 I guess
I mean,
you're
I suspect
like,
I suspect they planned most of this out or knew what was going, which episodes were going to feature what kind of characters, and this was going to be a Thor one, and like, it's going to be a funny one. Let's get Taika, get him to do, let's, for three episodes, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And then it's like, oh, well, we didn't end up using him because blah, blah, blah. Who cares? Whatever. He gets the credit because we paid him for it, basically. It's just, it's our yeah, editing right. decision. Either yeah. they didn't either bother rendering it and like got cut out of the script base, but whatever. Who cares? It was nice. And I like seeing their names up there because, I don't know. I like those people. I like that they're like, yeah, let's go have fun and drop one or two lines of dumb dialogue. That seems like a good way to spend an afternoon.
I mean, especially for Taika, who's like probably, you know, was directing a movie anyway. So they're probably like, yeah, come into the ADR suite for an afternoon and we'll have record like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right now, I've said this before, but I really enjoy how Favreau puts so much time into like that guy's, you know, Disney royalty at this point. He's, you know, but he's still getting to do Happy doing like saying pew, pew, pew as he's getting eaten by zombies, which is like fun.
Yeah, pretty much. All right. Do we have anything else to cover this week, or shall we just wrap up?
The only other thing that I just saw something earlier saying that Ms. Marvel, is it Ms. Marvel?
Ms. Marvel.
The show. Yep. Yeah. The show is being pushed to 2022.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, I hadn't seen
which
that.
Which was, at least that's the current scuttlebutt. So.
Well, that makes sense given that they are.
I was surprised at how many things were supposedly coming up. So
right, I mean, because that one, and I think that one and I want to say She-Hulk are probably fairly far along, and then Moon Knight is not that far behind it, and those were sort of the initial, with Hawkeye, those were the sort of the initial next set, and we know Hawkeye is coming in November. But I assume this COVID stuff just makes a production on everything slower.
Yeah, I mean, you can project your expectations, but as this bastard of a virus has shown us, it circumstances can change. So
right, we already had WandaVision and Falcon Winter Soldier got swapped, right? And even there, WandaVision, I think, started later than we had expected. Yeah. So I'm sure all of that is just, you know, the fallout sort of ripples down the line. But it doesn't surprise me, given that Hawkeye is starting in November and probably running basically then through the end of the year.
Yeah.
But I would expect that maybe it may start very early next year, like, you know, within end of January or February or something like that. So, because they want to, they don't want to have a huge gap, right? We're already going to have, so you got two more weeks, which means What If is taking us into the very beginning of October. And then you got a solid 6 weeks or something until Hawkeye comes on, because it's not until like Thanksgiving, basically. So there is a, that's like the largest gap without a Marvel show on the air in a while. Basically since they started airing them, you want to keep that content hose pumping there.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why we do.
Speaking of which, Star Wars Visions is out. I haven't seen any of them yet, but, obviously not Marvel content, but, Disney Plus
adjacent
content.
I watched the first one last night. I liked it.
Yeah, it's high on my list of stuff to watch, but I haven't gotten to it quite yet.
Yeah, I was going to watch them on the plane yesterday, but I did not because it was loud, and I wanted to watch. Like, I wanted to pay attention to them. You know,
I think I think that was the right choice. I think that was the right choice.
All right. Well, that is all we got for this week. Of course, we'll be back next week with coverage of the latest episodes of Stargirl and What If. And of course, you can find all our stuff on The Incomparable. And if you want to leave a rating for us on Apple Podcasts, much appreciated. If you want to buy a shirt, go do that over at Cotton Bureau. Go to search for BiffCast. John Moltz has Shirts of Plenty. That's his brand, Shirts of Plenty.
Shirts of Plenty.
It should be.
Should be.
Oh, yeah. I got my black Ted Lasso one. And it,
I know.
I look angry. Good. It makes me feel angry in a good way.
Good. Like, yeah, right.
It's a good angry is the motto.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We appreciate all your support every week reading the transcripts. We've got a little more time now. If you want to send us a letter, you know where to find us, biff@theincomparable.com, at BiffCast on Twitter. Maybe we'll have a chance to collect some thoughts in our next couple weeks with our load lightening a bit. So feel free to send those in if you got questions, you got comments, or just thoughts. Let us know. As always, I'd like to thank my co-hosts. John Maltz, thank you so much for being here.
Hammerang.
Guy English, always a pleasure.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.